there and welcome to Edulate. Today I would like to present you an interview with Kim Vernon. Kim is a digital technologies expert. She specialises in cybersecurity, curriculum, leadership and research. Kim works for the Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority, or ACARA, here in Australia. Kim's a passionate educator with a world of experience. Thanks for joining us, Kim.
Thanks, Beck. What an introduction.
Kim, I wonder, with Edulate, we often start with a conversation around how you became an educator and how you kind of got to where you are today.
Yeah, look, I've taken the long road, I guess you could say, like many educators. I think some sort of know very early on that that's the direction they want to go in and the field they want to work in, and others do take the scenic route. So I actually started life or adult life as a registered nurse, and just felt that I had a bit more to offer. I wasn't quite sure where that was or what that was doing, until one of my patients actually suggested that I might make a good teacher. So I thought, well, I might give this a bit of a whirl. So I started off in early childhood education. So I studied early childhood. And again, in that field, you usually sort of choose sort of one of two directions. You either do go into the early childhood space, into your preschools, long daycare, family daycare space, or you head into the early years of schooling in that kind of foundation to year two phase. So I really saw a spark in my eye with that early years in the F to two space in schools. And I guess I was lucky enough to have a couple of school leaders and principals in the early days who really allowed me to put into practice some of the early childhood philosophies and pedagogies that kind of go with that into my classrooms as well. And look, with that, I then sort of took on my primary conversion as well. So continued studying and teaching so that I had the primary degree as well, which then took me, I guess, off in a myriad of directions. So I managed to teach overseas in the UK and experience kind of their early years education system over there. And when I returned, I found myself, I guess, being sent off to a number of different professional learning sessions that were around website design. You know, we're talking 20 years ago, when schools were in charge of kind of setting up their own school websites and managing that. So I went off and learned how to use Netscape to build a website for the school. And that, I guess, again, set another little sparkle off in my eye of something I'd never considered before, and that was technology. Admittedly, first of all, it was around administration of technology and school infrastructure, I guess. But then that led me down the path of an ICT coordinator role within a school, which really challenged me as my first step. I didn't have any formal qualifications in technology in any way. But that sort of set me down the study path again of studying a postgraduate in IT and then heading off into my master's of ICT and digital tech. And I found myself back overseas again. So found myself in Singapore leading technology at an international school over there. So I went for 2 years, and that was way back in 2008, and came back about 10 years later. But during that process as well, I had an opportunity to work for the Singapore Ministry of Education in leading non-screen-based programming and coding in their preschool systems over there. So I guess throughout my little journey, I had that opportunity to step in and out of various leadership roles around technology as well. It's kind of find myself where I am today. So the role I'm in brought me back to Sydney and absolutely loving it. So that was my scenic route to education.
I like that phrase, the scenic route, but a very It's almost the the scenic route with all the detours, you know, all the hot destinations you want to hit on the way.
Yeah, look, I kind of I learn off other people. Obviously, I learn off all the research I do and the study I do, but it's the people and it's the relationships I've been involved with professionally that have really, I guess, sort of put my knowledge into practice and helped with that. So I've never been one to sit still too long. So whether that's going international or different roles or different schools, I really value the different environments and the different people I've been able to engage with, that they make me who I am today, I guess.
That's really beautiful because I think that's true of, true of how we grow. And I'm a bit the same, Kim. I am a relational learner, so I really listen to what's happening and watch what's happening around me and kind of apply that. So it's interesting that you kind of had a similar journey in respect to that, which interestingly leads me to what I was going to talk about next around. You touched on pedagogy earlier on and approaches in the classroom. I'm wondering if you might talk to us about some of, I mean, particularly in relation to digital tech and applying ICT and digital tech in authentic ways in the classroom. I wondered if you might shed a bit of light on, what are your preferences? What are the things that you found that really float your boat in that department?
The students and the students, what they bring to any lesson and the community that they belong to. Really the only way we can make digital tech authentic is to see it in practice in our lives, because that's where it is. That's the context of it all. In the classroom, we use the context of all of the other learning areas to place it into, but children bring so many different experiences and knowledge and skills to every lesson with them. So I always start with them and what's their passions, what are they seeing in the world around them, what are the issues that they come about in their everyday lives, regardless of technology. And then that's how we can bring the conversation into it. Well, is technology in a way hindering this particular situation, or is it something that we need to actually look at to enhance or to solve the issue at hand with it all as well? So, a lot of people often say, I've got these tools and I'm not sure what to do with them. Here's this piece of content in the curriculum. I'm really not sure where to start. And I always say you start with the kids. Pose it to them, throw some keywords at them, throw some scenarios at them and see what they come up with. And there's your data for where you head next with everything, because that they their eyes are wide open. They whether it's just in the school playground or whether it's outside those school walls, they see a lot, and they're able to bring that to some exciting ideas and lessons and make changes.
It's very true. The value that the children add to our classroom is shouldn't be underestimated. They come in with a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience, and a lot of opinions as well around what they need and what their world needs. And I think their voice is really important in that. So I love that you honor that and that's where you start. I think that's just beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and I hear a lot of educators say it. I think educators know that you don't place the tool first. The learning comes first, and then it's, well, what do we need? To move this forward. And sometimes it is technology, to be able to do that.
I know at the moment one of your or of recent one of the areas in which that you've really been supporting educators has been around the implementation of the new digital technology syllabus. And Akara have put out some fabulous resources, and there's been a lot of amazing ideas shared through a variety of projects that Akara have run and have supported educators across Australia with. But as an educator at heart, I know that's where your heart always is. How would you suggest that educators start to put their foot forward in implementing digital tech and ICT in their classroom? It's scary for some of us, you know, it's really overwhelming. There's so many things to choose from. There's so many new things. It's always changing. But I mean, what advice would you give us as educators?
Oh, look, there's two things at play here. There's the ICT capability, and then there's the digital technologies side of the curriculum. And I think if us as educators are not confident in our own ICT capability, we do have trouble transferring that into the digital technologies curriculum as well. So, look, as a starting point, I would probably start with my own skill set and just seeing where I sit through a self-assessment. And you mentioned one of the projects, and that was the Digital Technologies in Focus project, which was that four-year federally funded project. And there are a number of resources that we have developed on the DTIF website. And one of those is a self-assessment for teachers. So there is one for ICT based on the AITSL standards, as well as digital tech. So it's a really nice starting point, either as an individual or as a school, to actually sit down and say, where am I at, or where are we at as a school? And that can kind of help direct the professional learning that might need to happen as well. And if you find that, you know, that there's still some work to be done on the ICT capability, then starting in that unplugged space with digital technologies is a really safe space for everybody, students as well as teachers. We find the students move very quickly through things and pick things up, sometimes a little quicker than we as adults do, but that's okay. But yeah, I guess if you really need to get that solid grounding of the capability, which is the usage of tools, in order to start creating with them, which is what the digital technologies side of the curriculum is all about. And I think going along as a school really helps as well. You know, the safety in numbers, I guess. But you also find out who those champions are in the school, who can support each other, and who can step up a little bit as leaders as well in this particular area, and just support those that need the help as well. But again, draw on the students. I often speak about student leaders in the tech space, and having them step up, and there's nothing wrong with students educating the teachers on some of this as well. It's quite empowering for both to be able to see that in action.
That's something that somebody else recently mentioned as well, Kim, that, you know, allowing the students to sometimes lead is a really powerful thing, because it also shows, or it models, that we're lifelong learners as educators, and it's okay not to know everything. And I think sometimes as an educator, we have to know or let go of that need to be the leader in the room all the time. And sometimes we need to work shoulder to shoulder with our students.
Yeah, you know, being a co-learner is difficult, I think, for some teachers to get their head around, because, you know, our job is to educate. What that looks like, though, doesn't always have to be, you know, standing at the front, dictating the knowledge in a sense. But I think that co-learner opportunity is absolutely brilliant when it comes to digital technologies.
You mentioned unplugged earlier, Kim, and I'm aware that some of the people listening might not understand the difference between plugged and unplugged. Would you mind unpacking that a little bit for us people who might not necessarily have an understanding, or those out there that might not understand the difference between plugged digital and unplugged?
Yeah, look, it's essentially, as the name suggests, so unplugged is just using equipment and tools, and sometimes no equipment or tools, that are not connected in any way. So they are not a digital tool. So you might be using attribute blocks in your classroom. You might be using symbol cards that are sort of drawn on paper. So it's using, I guess, more traditional forms of technology that are not powered up, to kind of teach the concepts of digital technologies, whereas the plugged concept is where we're actually putting the digital devices in the hands of the students for them to complete the same task or a similar task. The digital technologies curriculum is set up in a way that the majority of it could be taught in an unplugged way. Although, you know, that's not ideal. We eventually want to get the tools into the hands of the students. But again, it's a really nice place for teachers to start if they're a little bit hesitant on what this looks like with digital tools, to start in the unplugged space. And there's lots of resources out there to support that as well.
Definitely. And I think the other thing that the curriculum really affords itself to, and you alluded to this, or you spoke about this earlier, is the fact that this plays across, whilst, you know, here in New South it sits in the science curriculum area or in the science syllabus, in the Australian curriculum it actually sits alone, which really gives us that flexibility of educators to look for other places in other curriculum areas where digital might fit and might complement or enhance what we're currently teaching.
Yeah, look, it's a little bit like all learning areas where there are certain bits of knowledge and skills that sometimes just need to be taught in isolation. You just need to know this. You just need to know how this works, or this little piece of knowledge. But at the end of the day, as I mentioned earlier, it's the context. Digital technologies can be extremely boring, I guess, if it's just taught in that isolated phase. It's not until you put it in the context of some geography and history and science that it really does come to life. Yes, in New South Wales, it sits in the science and tech syllabus. That doesn't mean teachers are restricted to that being where it's taught. They can, of course, pull those outcomes out into a number of different areas as well. But the exciting part is when you actually place it in the context of, you know, in HPE, the arts, there's so many spaces that that digital tech can fit into.
Kim, I think I'm wondering if we can lead now into some passion. So I'm thinking around, you know, you're kind of talking about this idea of it playing into different places, and digital tech, you know, does pop into lots of different, or allow itself that flexibility to, I guess, be integrated into geography or the arts or whatever it might be that kind of floats the teacher's boat. Is there a particular project or a particular thing that you have led or produced that really fired you up and went, yes, this is where it's at, this is where it's happening, and I can see the students just coming to life?
Oh, look, being part of the Digital Technologies in Focus project, you know, I had personally had 10 schools that I worked with across New South Wales, but there were 160 around the country, and there were 9 of us curriculum officers, and we often shared what was happening in all of our schools. What excited me was when I saw students in the school who all of a sudden found the context that was right for them. That's actually what kind of got me excited. So look, we had most of my schools were little schools. They were all of our regional, remote, and very remote schools. But I had a number of small schools of 10 students or less. And I know one little school down in Binda where the students really had this fascination, I guess, for bees. And, you know, that was kind of their science take on things, and they were building bee hotels, and they were studying the little blue banded bee that was around them. Anyway, that kind of took them down the path of, well, you know, we have these bees, but how do we find out more about them? And that's where they started to look at where digital technologies might fit in, to actually gather some data on the bees. What were the bees up to in their hive? You know, and things like the temperature of the hive and all of those sorts of things kind of took off. And this was, I guess, a real farming agriculture community. And I initially went in and was trying to pose some ideas around agriculture and farming for them. And it didn't really take off. And that's where I really learned when it's got to come from the students, from the kids. So it was, for them, it was the bees. It was all about bees. So, you know, we went with that We had some fantastic kitchen gardens that were being built in our schools as far as projects go. We had a secondary school that got robotics into their ag plot. And just seeing the students all of a sudden go, okay, I get this now. I get the place of digital technologies. It's more than just the capability. It's giving me a deeper understanding of my environment and the things happening around me. And I can now use that information to go and make more informed decisions of what I'm working on as well. So the projects were wide and varied, but they were suited to the community and to the school. And I think that was the most important thing. And that's what got me excited, because the students got excited about it because it meant something to them.
I think the other part of, the other part of your role, Kim, was really supporting schools as well. And I think as a relational person and somebody who listens well to what people need and what people want, and being a partner, you know, with students and with teachers, was there, I don't know, what kept you going? What made you, I guess, what made that part of the project really exciting for you? How did you keep going with all those schools, all those different personalities, all those different relationships you had to maintain? How did you actually keep that momentum and keep pepping everybody up?
Look, a number of different things. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. The reason I enjoyed it and kept it going from my point of view was those relationships, and it was the communities that were being built as sort of part of that. It's the ecosystems that were designed out of it. It was seeing the schools move forward. It was seeing the light bulbs go off for the teachers as part of this. It was seeing them step outside their four walls of their school and realize that industry was out there and industry wanted to connect with us and want to support us in all of this. So there wasn't really one thing. I think for schools, what kept it going was the fact that I kept turning up on the doorstep. That, you know, there's a number of projects that kick off. And, you know, they get a support person and they might be there for, you know, 6 months or 12 months, but I was there for 4 years and I kept knocking on the door and saying, hello, I'm here again. And schools could often go into a little bit of panic mode to think Kim's turned up again and we're not quite ready for her visit. But it wasn't about me coming in to inspect anything or to tick things off. It was just literally coming in as that friend to say, I'm here again, and whether you need me to take some classes, to give some planning time, just to chat in the staff room informally sometimes was all that was needed to get that conversation and the ball rolling again with teachers going, okay, yep, I'm starting to get this.
Must have been incredibly rewarding to come to the end of the journey and to be able to look at the beginning and then, you know, look at the successes and the varied successes, you know, looking at the Acara website. And I would encourage anyone who's listening to really get on and have a look at what some of these schools got up to and the way they, you know, had to pivot and change and adapt. It was truly inspiring. And the way that Acara really did work in partnership, they valued the voice of the school and they valued the voice of the community, and they were so keen to ensure that, you know, fruitful and meaningful relationships were established between Acara, community, industry and school. It must really just make you so proud to reflect on that and see it all.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to come from leadership whenever you want to implement change. And I think that was a key part of the project, was trying to make sure that the leaders within the schools were ready to go with this. It was an action research project. So we asked schools to dive in to their own school scenarios and find the driving question that was needed to move the technologies curriculum forward. So there were a lot of factors that kind of came into play on the project being successful. You know, we have a lot of changeover in staff and turnover, turnover in leadership, turnover in teachers, and with that, a lot of knowledge exits the school each time, but it goes to another school, hopefully, as people move on. But that was also why the project needed to be or have some longevity about it, because we wanted the sustainability. We wanted to be able to walk away after those 4 years and know that there was enough grounding there for whoever walked in the doors to be able to go forward with the digital tech.
Definitely. And I know that, you know, from my own personal experience, that has been a really big successor, and the way that that was managed and the way that that was really planned and thought out, that was amazing, I feel. Kim, anything else that you would like to share with those who might have tuned in about your journey or where they might connect with you or any exciting things you have up your sleeve?
Oh, look, the first thing I'd probably like to say is that don't forget about the Digital Technologies in Focus website. It's on the Australian Curriculum website under resources. That is where all of the curriculum officers that worked on this project have published a lot of resources for teachers and for schools to use, things about planning as well as teaching in the classroom. There's a lot of STEM illustrations of practice on the website. So there's some primary school illustrations of practice on there as well, which are really great to look at. So do take the time, if you can, to sift through that website. It'll really help you out with your planning, as well as just those ideas of where I might start. We've just finished the review of the Australian curriculum, but we are waiting for approval of that still. So there's no real news on that front yet. But life is always exciting. There's always something new around the corner. So people can find me at Akara, more than happy, or on Twitter. I'm on there as well. I'm on LinkedIn. So more than happy to connect with people and support in any way that I can.
And I'd highly recommend that, yes, you definitely look at that website that Kim has recommended as well. The Akara website is exponential. And as Kim's alluded, those people that worked on the project have created some amazing resources, but they've really worked hard with educators to think about what educators really need at the core of it all. So definitely jump on that. And I would highly recommend again that you connect with Kim if you have any questions, because I can attest to the fact that Kim has a wealth of knowledge and is one of those people who can really understand as an educator what it takes to have success with this curriculum or any curriculum in the classroom. So thank you for joining us, Kim.
Thanks, Beck. It's been a good chat.
I'm sure you'll agree that the podcast with Kim was inspirational, to say the least. Kim's passion shone through, as did her wealth of experience and knowledge. You've been listening to Edulate, and thanks for tuning in.